Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
Tenían algunos días señalando y amenazando con escalar en la agresión. Este señor tiene dotes adivinatorias. Marco Rubio. Pocos minutos después de que se diera el sabotaje contra nuestra industria eléctrica, dice reportes de completo apagón en todo el país, 18 de 23 estados. Los aeropuertos se encuentran también sin poder eléctrico. Pero mira una cosa muy importante de lo que este señor dijo y tiene que ver con lo que vamos a explicar inmediatamente después. Los generadores de respaldo también han fallado. ¿Cómo supo él dónde estaba específicamente la agresión? Ya lo vamos a decir. ¿Cómo supo él que los generadores de respaldo, como él los llama, no pudieron despegar si nadie lo sabía pocos minutos después de que se perpetrara el ataque criminal? Y por eso el tuit de Marco Rubio es muy revelador. Porque agredieron por vía de ataque cibernético un sistema que se llama Sistema de Control Automatizado ARDAS. Esa es una especie de cerebro electrónico computarizado que regula las 20 máquinas del Guri, donde se genera el 80% de la electricidad para todo el pueblo de Venezuela. ¿Cómo lo regula? Si hay un aumento de tensión y de demanda, este sistema le dice a las máquinas del Guri, actívense y aumenten la revolución para que pueda haber mayor carga eléctrica. Y lo contrario, al atacar ese sistema automatizado de control, entonces, por protección, las máquinas del Guri se paran. Esos son los generadores de respaldo de los que habla el señor Marco Rubio. ¿Cómo sabía, pocos minutos después de que se hubiera perpetrado el ataque, la única forma de saberlo es que estaba en conocimiento, como estaba en conocimiento de la agresión a nuestra frontera el pasado 23 de febrero?
March 9th, 2019. Thank you for joining me yet again. Well, let's get into this story specifically, because this is one that I recently touched on briefly. Wasn't sure at this point the outage hadn't become the story it has today. I touched on this right when it was happening. But there's a lot we're going to get into today, but this is going to be a focus for today specifically and what's all going on around this. So let's dive into this story. There's a lot of information you just saw in that video, if you watched from the beginning so far, that we're going to go over today in general. But let's get into this one. So just two days ago, as we covered then, Rubio openly said that the U.S. should promote, quote, widespread unrest in order to bring down the Maduro government. And now Caracas officials have accused the U.S. and opposition activists of causing pandemonium for several days, culminating in this blackout, which has been the worst ever power outage in recent history and has continued since Thursday. Now, President Nicolas Maduro said on Twitter, quote, "The electricity war declared and directed by the imperialist United States against our people will be overcome." Now, even if it was his fault this happened and the U.S. had nothing to do with it, you would expect a statement like this. It's a propaganda war today from all sides. But for those that immediately think, well, this must be Maduro's fault because he's an evil villain because I trust my government and career liars that tell me so. Well, if you're on that side, pay attention because there's a lot of information in here today that's going to take some real effort for you to ignore if you don't want to believe that the U.S. is behind this act, because I am convinced that the U.S. is 100% behind this cyber attack and causing the power outage, including the suffering that ensued after that. Now, power in some parts of Caracas have reportedly begun to return, despite, again, the media and other people there claiming that's not what's happening. However, it remains off and kind of intermittent in many other parts of the country. Now, some parts of the country reportedly have power restored within hours, right after the attack. But others remain in darkness right now for over 24 hours after that it first began. Now, many people will talk about the idea that this is not necessarily an attack on the grid, that the grid has had problems, which is clear it has, but more so an attack on causing this and then attacking the generators so they can't restore the power. Now, Venezuelan officials have said themselves that the hydroelectric station, the Guri Dam, was one of the world's largest, actually, has been sabotaged. And that's their open statement about this. Now, for the first article on this topic specifically, which is going to be a lot of the focus today, as I said, from RT, Venezuela's minister says major power outage likely caused by cyber attack points finger at the United States. Now, we're starting back a day, and we're going to work forward to what I would say is the proof that this was the United States. At this point, Venezuela minister says likely caused by cyber attack points the finger at the United States and goes over what they knew at the moment. And this is where this is a very, very revealing story. First of all, if anyone out there, whether or not this is the United States' fault or whether Maduro was responsible, you have to acknowledge that the U.S. has and would do something like this. That is a simple fact. Historically speaking, that is 100% accurate. Would do this, absolutely, have absolutely done this to other countries in the past. So keep that in mind as we go through this story. Now, Nicolas Maduro's government says that the emergency was a result of an external influence, or the fault of external influence, pointing the finger directly at the United States. As, again, you would expect him to do either way. Now, the major power outage was likely prompted by a cyber attack against the Guri hydroelectric plant, which produces 80% of the country's electricity, according to Jorge Rodriguez, Venezuela's communication information minister, and he said this on Friday. Interesting that it produces 80% of the country's electricity. Think of this in the context of attacking their oil and seizing their gold, which is the over 80%+ of what their revenue in this country, and then attacking their electricity in one location where over 80% of the electricity comes from, and then pointing the finger in both cases at them and saying, look at what you're doing to your country. It's humorous. Now, the official went on to hint that U.S. Senator and fierce anti-Maduro campaigner Marco Rubio may be linked to the offensive. Rodriguez found it suspicious that shortly after the failure, Rubio shared specific information on Twitter about the emergency that even local authorities were not aware of at the time. Now, there's plenty of other things we'll get into, but just this on its face is enough to suggest very clearly that they knew what was going on and they were likely behind it. How would he possibly know this information when even local authorities were not aware of it? Something you should ask yourself. As he asks the official that we're talking about, he asked, how did Marco Rubio know of the attack a few minutes later that the backup generators had failed? At that time, no one knew yet. No one. Now, this tweet from Eva Bartlett, this is where I first saw this article. As always, credit where it's due. Thank you, Eva, for all of your fantastic work. Now, branding the country, thank you for the super chat. Branding the countrywide power outage, quote, the most brutal attack on the Venezuelan people in 200 years, the minister promised to file a complaint to the Office of the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights. Now, President Nicolas Maduro earlier also accused the U.S. of waging an electricity war, as we've said in the beginning. The country's electric energy minister, for his part, said that the, quote, deliberate sabotage on behalf of the United States-backed opposition was the reason for all of this. Now, before getting into the other points, think of the timing of it all. That for decades, the United States has been saying Venezuela is a mess. Most of it either lies or their own doing. But yet, just after the U.S. fails with pressure, political stunts, planned force, and just about anything else they could possibly think of, the very next day, after they suggest it might happen, maybe, boom, the very next day, massive power outage. Coincidence? Well, for those that believe in coincidence, let's look just a little bit further. For the next article, the one that Eva linked to in this tweet, entitled, Venezuela denounces U.S. participation in electric sabotage. Now we go to a little bit further down the line. And now we're not going maybe linked to, but straight up saying the U.S. is responsible for a cyber attack on Venezuela. Funny, the hypocrisy of the, if indeed that is the case, which I believe it is, the hypocrisy is absolutely staggering to me. Of all the pointing the fingers of the cyber, about Russia and China and the cyber attacks, and here we go. And again, we know this, they've admitted to it. But of course, the U.S. only does cyber attacks and regime change when it's for democracy, spreading liberty and enforcing the rule of law, even though they don't follow it. But Venezuela denounces U.S. participation in electric sabotage. And the vice president of communication, the person you saw in the opening clip of tourism and culture of Venezuela, the vice president of communication, tourism, and culture, Jorge Rodriguez, offered a press conference on Friday, which just yesterday, during which he demonstrated the participation of the United States senator, of Florida, Marco Rubio, in the cyber sabotage that left the South American country without power for more than 24 hours and still, in a lot of ways, still ongoing. Now, he showed evidence of the participation of U.S. Senator Marco Rubio in the sabotage of the electrical system that left the country without services for now, and now increasingly, I think we're now well past, I don't want to say, because I know that some areas have come back on, but at least over 24 hours. Now, they attack the automated control of the GURI system that supplies the country with energy. This is according to Rodriguez, again, that you recently saw. Now, this information was handled by U.S. Senator Marco Rubio shortly after the aggression was executed, as he let it be known on his Twitter post that we've continued to point out. Now, there's a lot of information flying around. This is coming from Jorge, the foreign minister himself, about this entire topic. Again, linking to the information that shows very clearly with timestamps how that this, there's no way they could have known this information. Now, how did Marco Rubio know that backup generators had failed? At the time, no one knew that. And this is directly from the Bulgarian government official. Now, also, even Rodriguez denied that hospitals in Venezuela had recorded deaths during these power outages, as President Nicolas Maduro had ordered the provision of generation plants to prevent any such attack. Again, showing you even then that they were aware that this was in the works or that this was something they might do. So he took steps to make sure this wouldn't be the case. And now there's people claiming there's deaths happening all over the place. Now, he further showed a series of publications on the same social network as Senator Rubio, those of Secretary of State of the United States, Mike Pompeo, of the opposition, Juan Guaido, which tie them to this event. Rodriguez described this as the most brutal aggression to which the people of Venezuela have been subjected in 200 years. Now, while in Venezuela, it says, quote, society calmly assumed the consequences of the electrical sabotage, and the employees of the state electric power company are working tirelessly. Donald Trump's entourage was celebrating, enjoying with guilty perversion the anguish of the Venezuelan people. That's his quote, which is exactly what I said. Again, it's macabre humor. It's exactly what I said. Even if this was Maduro's fault, and again, based on the obvious facts, I think it's clearly not. They're still over here high-fiving and making jokes about this blackout. Out of one side of their mouth cheering, and out of the other side pointing to the suffering they claim is happening as a result, in morbid tones that are entirely incongruent with their jokes about the very same event. It does not line up. Now, on Thursday night, the Vice President of Culture and Tourism Communication of Venezuela, Jorge Rodriguez, affirmed that the intention of this act of sabotage was specifically to subject the Venezuelan people to several days without providing electrical service to attack them and leave vital areas without electricity. Last Wednesday, Marco Rubio even stated that Venezuela was, quote, within a few days of the most serious shortage of food and fuel. So, predictive programming, preparing everybody for what they knew they were going to do throughout this failing effort. And this is even though what he's saying there is verifiably not the case at all. There's clearly issues and shortages, but it suggests that, oh, somehow Marco Rubio, clearly a very intelligent person, can tell you that I know within a couple of days that because of these shortages, this is going to happen. And then on the mark, they go down from power. I mean, really, of course, coincidences are possible. But I highly doubt that Marco Rubio is intelligent enough to perfectly time out based on the information that he claims he knows about what's going on in Venezuela, that they would run out of power right at the moment they claim. It's ridiculous. Now, Rodriguez questioned that less than 3 minutes after the sabotage, less than three minutes later, Rubio appeared posting a tweet where he announced the situation. Clearly, that he was aware within 3 minutes when no one else knew and had information that no one even on the ground yet knew about exactly what had happened. As always, this takes some real, real dedication to not see for what it is. And the fact that they are doing this right in front of you shows you that they simply do not have a lot of faith in your intelligence level to be able to break this down. How if you look back at the history of their foreign policy and what they've done in places like Syria, Afghanistan, and Iraq, you find these same exact setups occurring over and over. And again, I think they're so used to these things working in the past that they just do them again. They reflexively fall into these same paths and people aren't buying it anymore. Now, online, there are those claiming that people have died due to these outages, which I don't doubt is probably or at least possible. Thank you for the super chat. And for those responsible for this cyber attack, that would quite literally be negligent homicide, whoever that may be. Creating this event and then allowing people to die, that's a crime, clearly. Now, there's a lot of places online that are pointing this out and showing or claiming that there are people dying. Here's one tweet. Patients of the dialysis center in Caracas are in their second day without treatment because of the blackout. Neighbors hear desperate screams, "We are going to die." Now, what this could be lies, propaganda, but it seems likely. I mean, the power is out. So it's highly likely that people are having issues exactly like this. So we need to be asking ourselves, who's responsible for this? Who is behind this, and who is responsible for the people that are suffering due to it? Here's another one. Doctors fighting to keep their incubator-dependent baby alive during the massive power outage in Venezuela. And this is a very sad one, with a very sad video that, you know, and it doesn't actually show anybody dying or anything actually happening, but it shows you clearly that there is a baby that is suffering on a monitor. And this is, and again, this video could be faked. It could be from a totally different country, but this is online being shared as if it's happening in Venezuela. Now, U.S.-backed regime change forces, including U.S. puppet and self-appointed Venezuelan President Juan Guaido, have claimed that 79 people have died due to these blackouts. Of course, each of these cases, the two I just showed you and all the other ones they're claiming with no evidence, all of them are being used by Marco Rubio and his parasitical cronies to make Maduro look like the bad guy, even though yet again their efforts are so poorly planned and poorly executed that we can see right through them. And we know that the U.S. was involved with this cyber attack on Venezuela, which I would say is quite clear based on the information we can see, which means that all of these cases of suffering civilians that we're looking at were caused by them. And they still then have the nerve to use that suffering to progress their agenda. That is truly sociopathic. However, there are also a lot of people calling on the accounts of all of the accounts of death and people dying and suffering due to these blackouts, fake news. And there's plenty I've been seeing fly around today about saying that all of it, not that it's not happening, but that people aren't dying, that people aren't suffering. This article claiming that the whole thing was pre-planned, which wouldn't surprise me, and that reports about the deaths in hospitals are fake. Certainly possible. Now, actually, the head of nurses in one of the largest hospitals in Caracas confirmed that there had actually been no deaths due to the general blackouts. And that's something that you won't hear on the mainstream media. Now, she could be mistaken. There could be deaths she didn't know about. But we're talking about, and you can, the link is in the show notes. This is her verified account, not the image you're seeing on the left there, but actually that's somebody translating what she said, which I checked into myself, of the tweet that she links to. That it's a head nurse of one of the largest hospitals in Caracas, in the capital, which is where they're focusing most of this. And she says not a single person has died. Now, Madeline Garcia, which is her name, the head nurse, also alleged that Marco Rubio knew the blackout was going to happen. This is an individual, an average person, describing in several tweets how the senator tweeted of the generator and other facts before they were made publicly available. So even the average people on the ground are very clearly recognizing his ineptitude. Or either Marco Rubio wanted us to know that this was all something that they orchestrated, or he's just not very bright and didn't recognize that we would point out the fact that how could he possibly know this 3 minutes after it happened? Now, as many referenced, Marco Rubio tweeted this out after it happened. A few weeks ago, the Maduro regime blamed iguanas for causing a large electrical grid blackout, which, by the way, is actually common and regularly verified as something that happens around in places just like this, but we'll just put that aside for the moment. He claims that he blamed iguanas for causing it. Now we have received the first video of what caused tonight's unprecedented nationwide blackout in Venezuela, and links to an image of Godzilla. Of course. To which, I naturally replied, regardless of one's stance on Venezuela, people are suffering, as even your own propaganda machine continues to point out. So the fact that you can be so blasé, so blithe about what's happening, making jokes why people suffer, shows us what an utter sociopath you truly are. I mean, he's literally on one side saying, oh my God, it's so terrible. Look at these people suffering. We need to stop it. And then tweets out a joke about why this is happening. Laughing about, oh, look, they're saying it's Godzilla. Oh, Maduro's a bad guy. This is so humorous to us. It does not line up. He's clearly a sociopath. These people have to be being okay with allowing these people to die to progress their agenda. But it shows you that the false concern and emotion they're putting on one side, that's the fake side. That someone could do that has to show you that. And of course, then he also tweets this one out, which I have to make some points about, where he says, how do you get a 36-hour nationwide power outage like what happened to Venezuela? You buy the loyalty of corrupt military officials by giving them control over electricity companies, which, you know, probably happens. I mean, truly, the governments are corrupt. So are you, Marco Rubio. So is the vast majority of our corrupt Washington political system. So that you would buy loyalty, you know, like lobbyists do in this country every single day, is certainly possible. Is Maduro corrupt? Probably. They all are. He goes on to say, instead of investing in maintenance, they steal the money. Again, which is it? Let's just go ahead and say that's true. Does that line up with what we're seeing here? Is Marco Rubio really standing here telling him that they are spending money on things that don't help their people? What about things that are happening in this country, Marco Rubio? What about the California fires that were literally just blamed on the fact of that the companies the government are controlling are not doing their job, that they're not clearing enough things out of the way, that PG&E is not doing its job on maintaining its areas? And you have the gall to point to them like it's literally what's happening in this country. Glass houses, Rubio. Do you think we're not smart enough to see what's happening here? The contradiction between the things you point to them and say, oh, how horrible it is over there. Well, it's literally happening here. You can't be that stupid. Well, the United States is spending almost $1 billion U.S. tax dollars to buy the Saudis' new missile defense system, while the vast majority of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. Is that like the kind of thing you're talking about? Like spending money areas that don't help the civilian population and then allowing the problem to continue while giving the money to your allies or your corrupt cohorts? Is that what you're talking about? Like sending a minimum of $38 billion a year to Israel and Americans can't even afford the smallest of emergencies? Or sending over $1 trillion a year abroad while this country does not even have safe water in the vast majority? Is that the kind of thing you mean? It's just, it really gets under my skin to see them point to some, to put on a picture of an overgrown electric post, whatever you want to call that. As if that's, whoa, look at how bad they are at their maintenance. Well, we literally just had some of the worst fires in Californian history because of the exact same thing. It's just, you can't, these people, trust me, they really don't think you're that smart. Now, the bigger question than if the U.S. was involved in this, which, I mean, truly, based on what we're looking at here, even just surface level, I think we can all see that the U.S. was clearly at least involved and complicit in this. But the bigger question than if they were involved from, you know, really, I mean, and again, to really stand back and think that we can to see how clearly that they were involved here from the timing to that Rubio knowing that he was that what he could not possibly know otherwise from, you know, but anyway, the bigger picture here than if they were involved is what did the U.S. accomplish or seek to accomplish during the massive blackout? Now, that's something that I don't know the answer to that question. But I think it's an interesting thing to think about. They caused a massive blackout. So far, I can't really see anything that has happened. So what did they do? Was this simply just to cause a blackout to point to them and say, look, they're a troubled country? I think they got that part across to the people that are willing to blindly believe them. I think something happened here, and I think we're going to see it play out in the near future. That's my opinion, but we should be asking ourselves that. What did they do while the power was down or is? But the logical conclusion of this, where we're at today, is now Venezuela is taking action to stop it. Venezuela deploys troops, quote, to protect national power grid from U.S. aggression, which makes sense. And of course, this is going to be broad stroked as some kind of a military aggression towards when they're really just protecting themselves against what the U.S. is continually trying to do. But now, actually using military force to protect their own power grid, which is something any country would do at the face of what we're talking about happening here. Now, to prevent further sabotage, they're saying, Venezuela's defense minister has vowed in an official statement via state TV social media channels to deploy armed forces to protect the national electric system for the duration of the power outage, so not indefinitely. Now, official accusations against Washington for conducting what Maduro has called a U.S. electricity war have increasingly grown in the last 24 hours. Again, showing you that all it really takes is for someone to be presented with the information, the full picture. And it doesn't take much for them to be like, wow, yeah, this is pretty clear. The U.S. is involved in this. Like, what are we talking about here? It's obvious. Again, clearly based off of their record, their track record from doing the exact same thing. And now, as RT puts it, which is an interesting thing to think about, after all of this, and who knows what's going to change after what they might have done in the blackout, but up until this point, back to square one, Washington now says no timeline for regime change in Venezuela. Interesting. So, I mean, as I've been saying, they're failing at this. This is a floundering effort that they're trying to present as something that's already succeeded. It's already over, didn't you know? It's already changed. As they're freaking out behind the scenes trying to make this happen. It's not. And so now they've shifted their saying. Now, remember, when they first started, it was, this is imminent, right now. He's gone. It's already over. And now it's saying, oh, well, you know, no timeline. Back to square one, clearly. Which is kind of the same thing we're seeing dance around in Syria, which we're going to get to more in a moment. But after weeks of insinuating that, you know, and just, I would say, outright suggesting or saying that Nicolas Maduro's departure was imminent, Washington now insists that there's no timeline at all for regime change in Venezuela. Completely flipping the script. Now, when Vice President Mike Pence released that video statement in January, pledging full support for the random guy named Juan, who self-appointed himself president, and the U.S. was involved in from well before it ever happened, you know, kind of grooming him from a long time before, which they've done so many times before this, many assumed that an operation to install the opposition leader in Caracas was just around the corner, which I'm sure all of them listening to the mainstream media and the government were like, yeah, it's already over. Now, more than a month later, and with Maduro clearly still firmly in power, Washington seems to be just completely out of ideas. Not only has the U.S. failed to deliver its, you know, humanitarian aid to Venezuela, but Washington's allies from all over, from the Lima Group to the United Nations to the EU, have completely unanimously ruled out military action, which doesn't mean it won't happen. The U.S. doesn't really care what everybody else has to say, and their history has shown that. Now, the Trump administration now asserts that there is no timeline for this regime change, and they've said it openly. What some have described as a thinly veiled admission of a failure, which is interesting to think about. Because, of course, they're not going to come out and say, oh, yeah, we failed, we didn't get it done, back to the drawing board. They're going to do the same thing they're doing in Afghanistan and everywhere else. They're failing there, too. And they're trying to create something that makes it seem like it was a win at the end of the day. So clearly, a thinly veiled admission of failure. Now there's no timeline. Now we're back to the drawing board. Washington still contends that, quote, all options are on the table, as they do every 30 seconds. But as they ask in the article, how many options are truly left here other than military option? Now, before moving on to other topics, I wanted to share another point that Ben Norton recently made. Now, this is in regard to the outright lies that are currently being circulated without question by blind supporters of this illegal coup. Does that mean there's nothing bad happening in Venezuela? Of course not. But there are very clearly verifiable lies that are being unquestioningly circulated by those who support this. Now, there are many, many of these, and they are astoundingly easy to debunk. Really just taking a moment to research something online. But a very important one is in regard to the level of suffering of the average Venezuelan. You know, be it starvation, lack of healthcare or supplies, or many other things. Now, the reality is that this level is nowhere near what they want you to believe. And in some cases, it's actually worse here in the United States, statistically, verifiably. Now, are there issues in Venezuela? Of course there are. But it's important to both be honest with yourself about what are obvious lies and to be able to objectively compare each issue to the state of the same issue within the United States and its allies. Seems like a pretty logical thing to be able to do. Now, here's a tweet from Ben Norton, and it says, yes, there are some economic difficulties in Venezuela, of course, caused largely by an economic war waged by the U.S. and its right-wing opposition, but I still did not see many homeless people there, as in Venezuela. It says, yet there are, quote, significantly more here in the world's richest country, and links to an article about there being 1.3 million homeless students in the United States. And this is true, by the way. Links in the show notes, research it for yourself. But it's something that people would reflexively go, that can't be true because Maduro's an evil bad guy and he's killing everybody, right? That's what they're telling us. How could it possibly be worse here in our country? Because we just don't want to believe it. In addition to that, Abby Martin, as I pointed out before, I think on numerous occasions I've pointed this out, that she's done countless, I mean, her research is some of the best from the ground in Venezuela. And she's pointed out more than once that Venezuela specifically has the lowest homelessness of in any country in South, or rather, I would say to be more accurate, because who knows if it's changed in the last so many months because of what the U.S. has been doing. But prior to this recent coup event, they had the lowest homelessness of any country in South America. That's a simple fact. While they're currently doing that, it's just the contrast. You have to do your research, people. You cannot believe what they want you to know, because their job is to misrepresent the information and mislead you. That's what they do. And if you watch this show, you probably already know that. But maybe I got through to one more person today. But let's move on to some Syria news, because this is very important stuff. And a lot of this stuff happening in Syria and other places in the world are taking a backseat because of what's going on in Venezuela. And rightly so. Venezuela right this moment, in my opinion, is one of the biggest things we should be focusing on. But that multitasking is the key. We need to be paying attention to all of these things, because Israel specifically constantly takes the initiative, let's call it, while something like this is happening. While there's a big event happening, Israel bombs Syria. And they sneak it in there and hope that no one's paying attention, except that we're always paying attention. But we have to be paying attention to everything going on. And this specifically is in regard to Syria. Now, this coming from the Jerusalem Post, Syria vows to attack Israel unless it withdraws from the Golan Heights. Now, I'm not a fan of the Jerusalem Post, but this first place I saw it. And they're reporting that it was said. I haven't really seen it anywhere else, but this is the truth. But the article itself, of course, goes out of its way to, you know, represent things in a way that I probably don't agree with. But the fact is that Syria has for a long time said that they're taking back Syria in its entirety. That includes the Golan Heights. As the international community has roundly acknowledged that Syria, or rather the Golan Heights, is being illegally occupied by Israel. That's a simple fact, which is why the United States is now standing with them and saying, no, we acknowledge that Golan Heights is theirs. And we're going to read that more in a second. The actual bill in our new Congress that's been proposed to acknowledge their right to have the Golan Heights. You know, of course, what your Congress should be doing, passing bills that help Israel. Isn't that what they do? Again, how many things have they done that help Americans so far? I'll let you puzzle that one out so far. I can point to at least 5 or 6 things they've done that are specifically to help Israel. You know, shows you where their alignment is in regard to what they should be doing every day. But vowing to attack this, they're going to take back the Golan Heights, and they've said it numerous times. That's their territory, and they will take it back. And that's why Israel's kind of going overboard right now to make sure that they get, especially that the U.S. acknowledges it's theirs. And you could argue this is because Israel has told them, hey, you need to come acknowledge this is ours. And that's interesting to think about in regard to the larger topic of Israel's influence on U.S. foreign policy. Now, according to World Israel News, Syria vowed to attack Israel unless it withdraws from the Golan Heights, which is Syria's territory. And understand that the Golan Heights has a vast, vast amount of water and oil that the U.S. and Israel very much want and need, specifically the water in regard to Israel and its recent droughts. That's why. It's a huge amount of water. And that's why they're trying to take it. And again, once we get into the bill or the discussing acknowledging the Golan Heights, it shows you clearly that within the bill that most people don't read, it says that they're there to take stuff like the water and the oil. Now, Syrian Deputy Foreign Minister submitted an official warning to the head of the United Nations Truce Supervision Organization, UNTSO, Kirsten Lund, in what seemed to be an attempt to prevent official U.S. recognition of Israeli sovereignty in Golan, because clearly Syria wants their land back. And so now they're taking steps with the United Nations to try to stop this from happening. And it says, quote, "We will increase the numbers of residents in the Golan, sending a resounding message to all. We will never relinquish the Golan Heights." This is coming from Benny Gantz, an Israeli politician and general, and the 20th chief of general staff of the Israeli Defense Forces. Just saying it's ours. We're not leaving. We're going to flood it with people, which is what they've actually been doing for a long time. Now it says, quote, "We will enlist the support of the United States. We will enlist the support of the United States and the international community to promote Israel's interests on the northern border." Now, understand what he's saying there. He's not saying we'll ask the U.S. to stand with us because we're in the right or because that we have a legitimate claim to this land. No, we're going to enlist. We're going to make sure the U.S. and the people that are under our thumb stand up and promote Israel's interests on this border. Not Israel's legitimate right, but just their interests. They want this. It's theirs. So U.S., come tell them it's ours because we've made claim to this. That's pretty, I mean, it's telling how open Israel is about its influence over the United States. Yeah, we'll just go get the United States to make sure they tell them it's ours. It's already done. That's basically what he's saying. And he goes on to say, quote, "We have a historical right to it," which is ridiculous. and it's a strategic asset. That's the truth. He goes on saying, adding that, quote, we will never give up the Golden Heights. It is ours and we will stay. It will stay ours. And all of this information, it's not saying, oh, this is our right. We have a right to this land. It's always been ours. Syria is crazy. They're lying. No, they're just saying now that we've taken this to the spoils go the victor, or excuse me, to the victor go the spoils, as Trump would like to say. They're just saying it's ours now. And we're going to make sure U.S. lets them know what's up. Now, let's take a look at the bill. Because many people haven't actually looked at this. H.R. 1372, to clarify that it is United States policy to recognize Israel's sovereignty over the Golan Heights. Again, why this needs to be done? Why the House so far in this 116th Congress does this at all with all the things going on in this country? It shows you that this is important to them. Either whether they're being paid by Israeli lobbyists, like that's because that's what lobbyists do, whether it's from the NRA or Big Pharma, they pay politicians to do what they want, or hoping that they'll do what they want, and they usually do. But whether they're being paid to push this early forward, or they just know where they know what time it is in regard to who's controlling them, this is one of the earliest things. And again, there's so many of them: the Anti-BDS Act, the Anti-Semitism Act, the Anti-Semitism Ambassador, the money to Jordan, the money to Israel, the sanctions on Syria. All of this stuff is for Israel. All of it. And this is what your Congress has been doing so far. But let's go through this real quick, because this is important. Now, some of this I wasn't even aware of. On September 1st, 1975, President Gerald Ford provided a diplomatic assurance to Israel that the, quote, the U.S. will support the position that an overall settlement with Syria in the framework of a peace agreement must assure Israel's security from attack from the Golan Heights, and it will give great weight to Israel's position that any peace agreement with Syria must be predicated on Israel remaining in the Golan Heights. Now, again, recognize, nowhere in there does it say it's our land. It's always been our land. We have a right to it. They're simply just saying it's ours now, and we're going to make this in our bill say that it is ours no matter what. That's basically what it's saying, that all of this is predicated on the fact that you say that this is now their land, or else we're not dealing, or, you know, or else nothing is legitimate. It goes on to say in October 1991, so understand, Gerald Ford basically said in 1975 that it's their land. Not because it should be, but just because we're in charge and we're going to say that. Now, in 1991, Secretary of State James Baker provided a diplomatic assurance to Israel, another one, of course, that, quote, the United States continues to stand behind the assurance given by President Ford that it's basically their land. So not only did they say it's their land, they had to come back again and say, just so you're unclear, not sure, we're reiterating that this is yours. Okay, just Congress bowing to their masters. Now, and it goes on to say, now this is where it gets interesting. You'd think a bill about specifically Golan Heights being Israel's land would be pretty cut and dry. But no, they include something about Iran. Iran, it says, has used the war in Syria to establish a long-term military presence in the Levant. Except the fact that the war in Syria, because of the U.S. occupation of Syria, is the only reason that they're there. Right? So Iran has used the war that that U.S. created to establish an occupation there, is what they're basically saying. Even though they're claiming Iran is doing this subversively, they're sneaking in and causing, and they're trying to basically create terrorism all over the area. This is what they want you to think. But the reality is they're there because they were invited there by Syria because the U.S. is illegally occupying their territory. But it doesn't talk about that. It just says that Iran has used this whole situation to establish themselves, to attack Israel from across the Golan Heights, and to create territorial corridors that allow it to provide arms to its troops and terrorist proxies. Which is outside the terrorist proxies, just doing what any country would do, defending itself. But it goes on to say, it is the United States' national security interest. Now, always take note of how often this is now being thrown around in regard to just the smallest thing that Israel wants. It says, quote, it is the United States' national security interest to ensure that Israel retains control of the Golan Heights. How is it in any way, shape, or form a national security interest for Americans to make sure that they have illegally stolen land from Syria? I mean, really, anybody, please stand up and tell me how that's a national security interest. It's an interest of the military-industrial complex. It's the interest of the real rulers of this country. But it's in no way, shape, or form a national security interest. And Americans need to wake up. And it goes on to say, the Syrian regime of Bashar al-Assad, of course, faces diplomatic and geopolitical consequences for the killing of civilians and the gassing and all the things that we have no evidence to support. And that we've proven there's no evidence to support. And one of those cases in Douma has just been proven to be an outright, utter fabrication. But of course, within this new bill, they add that in addition to all of it, we need to make sure that Assad is also charged for things that we can't prove. That's somehow included in this Golan Heights bill. And it goes on to say, it shall be the policy of the United States to recognize Israel's sovereignty over the Golan Heights. That's our policy, apparently. To promote and conduct joint projects with Israel on the Golan Heights. Here's where it gets interesting. To conduct joint projects. Ah, okay. Now it starts to materialize on maybe why they want Israel to have this land and they want to acknowledge. Not because they have a right to it or legal justification, but because and they want basically, I shouldn't have said A, it says A, but it says to promote and conduct joint projects with Israel on the Golan Heights. Projects include A, in basic and applied scientific fields, B, in industrial research and development, and C, in strategic and applied research of agricultural problems. So basically, so we can take the oil, take resources we find, steal the water, and then use this area for strategic and, you know, research. It's obvious. They want this area for all those listed concerns or agendas to take the land that's resource rich. Bottom line, because this is what they do. It's what they're doing in Venezuela. It's what they're doing everywhere they do this. It's obvious. This is right in their own bill. And it says any, and this is the end, any reference to Israel in any existing or future act of Congress. So this broad sweep of anything that ever happens in the future, which it says, relating to appropriations of foreign commerce includes customs and international trade shall be interpreted to include the Golan Heights. So now Israel is just the Golan Heights or vice versa. That's a blanket statement. And first of all, think of the power that they think they wield, that the United States would be able to pass a bill in their country that applies to the world. I mean, I think we see this today. They're sanctioning people where it used to be the United Nations. The United States is just completely stepping over them and showing who the real power structure is here. And that should scare people. Not because Americans are bad or the United States is bad, but because the U.S. oligarchy is clearly off the rails, working with Israel and Saudi Arabia and the worst people in the world. It should be pretty damn obvious. Now, in other news, Syria and Russia are clearly kicking off a new Idlib offensive in regard to Syria. And this I find to be very important. And this is just a couple of quick stories to end the show here today. This is important. Syrian army strikes terrorist stronghold in northwestern Idlib for the first time in months. And again, this is we're going to see this happen because Idlib is clearly an important spot. And of course, once they take back Idlib and more of the northwest or northeast, excuse me, they're clearly going to be coming after Golan Heights. For the first time in more than 5 months, the Syrian Arab Army, the SSA, did launch a barrage of heavy rockets at terrorist positions inside the city of Jisr al-Shagur in the northwestern part of Idlib on March 6th. And it's going to be continuing. And remember what the United States continues to threaten them, saying if anybody attacks anything in Idlib, we're going to take action. But now, of course, a lot has changed since they last said that. They're pretending they're leaving. Oh, only 400 people. That's going to stay in a couple of scattered areas, but we're going to be over here in Iraq. Don't worry. I wonder how long it takes for them to come right back. Here's another one. Russian warplanes strike militant positions in western Idlib. This is from today. Warplanes of the Russian Aerospace Forces carried out a series of airstrikes on militant positions in the villages of Mintar, Frike, and Tel Katab in the western Idlib countryside. So this is multiple locations now. Multiple locations. This last article, this is from today. So this may indeed be the very excuse the U.S. needed to further increase U.S. troops in Syria. We may see this change in the very near future. As far as I can tell, they haven't addressed this yet. Now, we know they sent thousands of troops, what I talked about at the time. Numerous ships, helicopters, all under the guise of needing them to pull out the troops from Syria that we promised we were going to leave, but now we're not. And I talked about this at the time. And just as I expected, just as I predicted, before they could actually arrive, the narrative changed. And now we have most of the troops going to Iraq, as they claim, and some staying in Syria indefinitely, of course, to protect Israel and combat Iran, neither of which is a legitimate legal justification. But if you are the U.S. or their allies, such a justification is simply no longer needed, right? You don't need legitimate legal justification. So what of the troops that they sent there? They sent all these people there and everyone, Ryan, you're crazy. You need troops to be able to bring them back safely, blah, blah, blah. And everyone said that. And I said, well, we're sending more troops while we're claiming we're pulling them out. Seems like it might not work out what we think. Oh, no, you're crazy. And guess what? Now they're there and now apparently no one's leaving. So what of the troops that they sent? The thousands of extra troops? What of the fact that Syria saw a 50% increase in U.S. troops over the last month and a half? What of that? We're all pretending like this is already over, but they've made it very clear that basically no one is leaving. The troops that are leaving Syria are going to the border of Iraq so they can basically still do what they're doing. They're leaving people in Al-Tanf and other places in Syria, and they just sent in a crap ton of increased troops. And just before that, they had an increase of 50%. So what's really going on? Basically, like I said, we just went from we're drawing down to an increase in troops. Pretty simple. All the context in between, all of the information, oh, well, he changed his mind because this doesn't matter. Was I psychic? No. I just know how this stuff works. It's all political doublespeak, and if you're still playing that two-party game, that's why you missed it. It's time to pull back from it and recognize how often you're being lied to. Now, to finish today, as it is now week 17 of the global yellow vest movement, for which I am sharing my revolution shirt, which Truth Clothing, you can see. So if you'd like to grab one for yourself, you can go to truthclothing.io. Make sure you put in Vagabond in the show notes there. But for the last part of it, week 17 of the global yellow vest movement. And of course, the mainstream media still refuses to cover it. I wanted to make sure that you all are aware that it is indeed still happening, that it is still rising. And they really, really do not want you paying attention. Here's a tweet from Sarah Abdullah. Tear gas everywhere as thousands of yellow vest protesters hit the streets in France for the 17th week in a row. 17 weeks, and they still refuse to talk about it. People getting killed, hands blown off, eyes blown out. And no one cares about this. But we have an allegation about something in Syria or Venezuela. Oh, it's the breaking news headline of Fox News and CNN. Nothing to back it up. We can't prove it, but sources say this happened. Well, here's people dying in France, and they go, we're gonna wait for more information. Of course, that's how it works. People are, what's happening in France right now is a bigger deal, and they do not want you looking at it because it throws into stark contrast the lies about what they really care about. Clearly, if they cared about people suffering, we would be seeing a regime change in France, which I don't want a regime change anywhere for that matter. But clearly, this is a big deal. Here's another tweet from her saying, police brutality, beat up unarmed protesters, Russia, Syria, Venezuela. Nope. This isn't today in France. Clearly showing you the absurd contradiction between what they pretend to care about. People like, I mean, again, if this happened in Venezuela today, it would be the biggest story of the day. Not a peep on mainstream media. We really need to see what's going on here, people. We really need to find out what time it is in regard to this global power structure that is clearly shutting down things just like this because it scares them. And toppling other countries that are trying to do the same, I would say. Other countries that are at the very least trying to inch away from what they see happening. The control, this blob that's consuming everything, and they're trying to get away from it. And that's why they get taken down. Whether you're dropping the dollar, trying to be independent, don't want a central bank, whatever it may be, they'll take it down for it. And the yellow vest is a natural response to people waking up to what's going on. And they really, really don't want you to see it. So it's something you should be supporting. And I guarantee you, just in the few things that I've saw, people being beat, people being injured, mainstream media doesn't care because they're hypocrites. That's why. But it's time to begin paying attention to all of this. Time to begin spreading all this information and waking people up as best you can. Thank you again for tuning in today. If you'd like to support this channel, you can do so with all the links in the show notes, from Patreon to Bitbacker to PayPal to buying a Question Everything t-shirt or this one from Truth Clothing. As I always say, just simply being here, being a part of this, being in the chat, sharing the information. Because I try to point out to you all on a regular basis, we are indeed making a difference. And they really don't want you to know that either. So thank you for being here. I love you all. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.